What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
you dare
feminism?
Me to make it about
feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the are Feminist now listening Bar podcast. To the Feminist Bar podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Feminist Bar podcast with your host, Tinatwe Maka. Welcome to another episode in the 80,000 Too Many series. This is an abortion storytelling project to demystify safe abortion, and it is funded by the Urgent Action Fund and the Black Feminist Fund. Shout out to our donors. I'll be showing you guys love every single episode. Hashtag relationship building. Welcome to this episode, guys. I hope that you have been enjoying the series as much as I have enjoyed. I'm saying this at a point where you have not heard it yet, but it has been seriously such a joy to sit down with different people and unpack safe abortion in Zimbabwe. Today, we are going to be talking about abortion aftercare a little bit in detail, I guess, because we have previously spoken on it, I think last year. And I have Mercy here today, and they're just going to introduce themselves. Hi, Mercy. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself to the community, the people?
My name is Mercy Madachani. I'm a feminist. I like seeing women thriving in any spectrum of their lives.
We're in the right place then. Today, we're going to be speaking about abortion aftercare. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what that is and maybe okay. Some of the work that you have seen or you have done in this area.
Okay. So when we talk about abortion aftercare, we're talking about the things that are done after a person has had an abortion, a clinical abortion, and making sure that they remain healthy even after the abortion, right? It might be provision of contraception. It can be counseling. It can be prophylactic antibiotics, and even just counseling about the adverse complications that may arise as a result of the abortion, and what to do and what not to do when somebody has gone through an abortion. In the work that we have done, we've worked with hospitals where we work with survivors of abuse. And in some cases, they've had to apply for a termination of pregnancy, and they've had the abortions done in the hospitals by the medical doctors that are prescribed to do that. When we talk about the aftercare, we're talking about making sure that they are sound holistically. We're talking about mentally. We're talking about their health. We're talking about everything that concerns them, their body and their mind. It's quite traumatic for some when they go through an abortion, especially in my line of work where they've had to get an abortion because they were raped and they became pregnant. You know how that is. The trauma that then entails from the time that they were raped and having had to carry a child that they're not willing to carry, or maybe they're not even healthy enough to carry. This might be a child or even an adult who has gone through a very traumatic experience of rape, and now they are pregnant for that rapist. So now they want a sound mind after everything. So they need counseling as well. So in my line of work, we go through the counseling sessions with that person who has had an abortion so that at the end of the day, they don't blame themselves. They know that this is part of life and that they can also be part of the society again, even if they've had an abortion. Because, you know, there are some religious thoughts and ideologies that are attached to it. You know, the backlash that may come from the society as a result of somebody having had an abortion. So all that needs to be addressed with the person that has had an abortion so that they don't blame themselves, and then so that they're also mentally sound. And also when we're looking at health, maybe it's somebody who has had pregnancy that they don't want because they have not accessed contraception of some sort. We're also talking about provision of contraception and explain to them why they need to take contraception that they don't fall pregnant again. Also antibiotics, because if somebody has had an abortion, you are then prone to a lot of infections. So you also need to be wary of that. You make sure that they take their prophylactic antibiotics and make sure that you also explain to them why they don't need to insert stuff inside their bodies also is that may also introduce infections into their bodies as well. I think that's basically it.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that breakdown. I love like two things that you mentioned. The first was the holistic approach to abortion aftercare, because the way that I see it, it's also kind of, as a community, we are also somewhat like duty bearers in abortion aftercare. So on a personal level, that would be the access to the antibiotics and the access to the contraception. But on a community level, it might also just look like ensuring that people are not facing stigma and normalizing abortions as medical procedures and our understanding of it from more of a perspective of kind of changing social norms and how we view things. Because it's often that you'll see people having an argument or you'll see people referring to kind of like abortion in a way that is really stigmatizing, but also supposed to be very insulting. And I think it's our duty as the community to not to speak about abortion in a certain way that is not that. And I think that is a part of abortion aftercare, if you really think about it, because where people do not feel shamed or stigmatized for something, then they can access something more easily. And the way that in which we think about it will ultimately change, I guess, the policies and the access around that thing. Like you speaking about the shame and then you also speaking about the holistic approach just made me think a little bit about that. So I wanted to ask you about abortion aftercare in a country where abortion is pretty restricted. That being said, a lot of people want to know, for example, if they access an abortion somewhere or if they do an at-home abortion, if they face any complications for whatever reason, should they go to a hospital? Should they go to a clinic? What does that look like for them? Will they get the help they need? Will they be processed like everybody else? How does that usually go in your experience?
Okay, so because primarily we are human, right? Before anything else, we've had situations where people have had abortions in their backyards and they've had complications. But once somebody comes to the hospital, they are entitled to services. If there are going to be any investigations that will be done as a result of somebody getting sick, at times they've become fatal. Yeah. We've lost some children, even older people, to abortion in the backyard. But once they come to the hospital, they are entitled to services. They get treated, but of course, there are going to be investigations as well because they've done this illegally and all. But it's not like a prerequisite for somebody to finish the investigation and then the police report and everything before they get medical help. They get the medical help that they need, but definitely there will be investigations as to how and where it was done, especially when somebody dies. It then becomes complicated, yeah.
Yeah, I see how something serious could lead into that inquiry, because I think even in my own work, getting a lot of like having people reach out to say that, oh, like this person is going through complications, but they would rather die at home than literally go somewhere and then be shamed and be investigated, which actually does happen to a lot of people, because, you know, according to the statistics, there's about 20,000 deaths due to unsafe abortion. And I think a large portion of those people are actually not going to the hospital. I can't necessarily speak on that. That's not in the research. That's just my own opinion. What do you think about that?
Oh, yes. You see, that's the unfortunate part of this whole abortion thing, because once somebody does that, now they get scared to go to the hospital because they know that they're going to be investigated. But I think if this was legalized, I'm sure people would do it in more safer ways, and there would be no need for people to die at home because they've done it in the unsafe environment. Because definitely, when people do it in their backyards, there's going to be a complication somehow because of the resources that may not be enough for them to carry out such a procedure. So yeah, it's unfortunate really, because what we'd want to see is a place where people can just go into a hospital and say, I need to have an abortion. They do the necessary paperwork and everything is done in a clean and safe environment. But it's unfortunate that because this is illegal, and if somebody wants to have an abortion, they have to apply and it has to be authorized by a magistrate, looking at the circumstances surrounding them becoming pregnant. And then, you know, it can be declined or approved. When it's declined, and somebody really needs to have that abortion, they are then going to resort to going to a backyard surgery, and then they're going to have that. So it's quite unfortunate that this is where we stand. But if we have it any other way, I would think that if abortion was legalized, would have less deaths as a result of abortion.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that the bottom line always is that, you know, the criminalization of abortion doesn't actually stop abortion. People still go through a termination of pregnancies. There are service providers in so many different places and so many different levels and tiers of like society. This is why you have people that are literally using hangers to help high school girls do unsafe abortions, because there's people that have designated themselves as abortion providers, knowing very well that the demand is high and yet the provision is extremely low. And I think the biggest part about this, and maybe why it then doesn't become such a big deal sometimes to people, is sometimes the regions that it is happening in. We all know that if you are someone who has access to resources, you are probably someone who can access a much safer abortion than others. There are several service providers that are medical doctors that will have you do it in an entire office where you will feel safe and clean and everything will be perfect. But there are also people where you will literally be doing it in a backyard, quite literally. Mm-hmm. And we know who is going where, right? Rich people do not have to worry when they get pregnant.
They don't.
They just know, I have my $400. I'm going to be straight. Yeah, I think this conversation maybe sometimes doesn't always happen the way that it needs to, because some people's interests are kind of already protected. And it's kind of the same thing, for example, in America, when people are talking about Roe v. Wade, it is mostly a majority of women that are in poor communities that are impacted by the lack of access to abortion. As long as you have money, you can access whatever you want. You're above the law, you're above the policies, you're above the system.
Unfortunately, yes. So, you see, we'll still come back to the criminalization of abortion, because if it wasn't, then people would actually access it in more affordable spaces. But because of the criminalization that really falls around it, then the poor mercy will not be able to access it from a private doctor or a private health institution. But my sister, who's richer than me, is just going to walk in there and walk out, and no one will know about it. So my story is going to be known, because probably I'm going to have some infection that will push me to go to the hospital, or I'll end up dead in some backyard. And that's the sad part about it.
Yeah, you're so right. So let's get into kind of the importance of abortion aftercare as a whole. I know we've spoken about like mental health, for example, which for me then makes abortion aftercare a very intersectional conversation. Yeah, because now we're talking about all of these other different things. And I think I would just say, on my end, I see normalizing aftercare as an act of recognizing that abortion is a regular and normal medical procedure. And just like if you got your appendix removed, you would need some aftercare for that. It is the same way that if you have termination of pregnancy, you should also be entitled to aftercare. And this is not just on that personal level and that community level, but as we start lobbying and mapping ways and strategically litigating around unrestricted safe abortion in Zimbabwe, we should also think about aftercare, because holistically, those are the things that kind of carry the policies. And those are the things that actually are impacting the women who are having termination of pregnancies. Outside of the politics and outside of the arguments, the way that we're going to structure abortion aftercare will also determine how safe people feel to access some of these services, and how safe they'll just feel in general, how safe they'll feel in their bodies, and how they will exercise their bodily autonomy. So yeah, like from your perspective, having spoken about counseling and mental health, what is the importance of this in the broader sense of things, like in our feminist movement, in our movement building, in how we will move forward in this fight?
Oh yeah. So like I've already alluded to, we're talking about how somebody needs to be sound holistically, right? So I think it's very important for somebody to get abortion aftercare, because once they know what they need to do or what they don't have to do after an abortion, right? It's more of secondary prevention, right? When we talk about the aftercare in a nutshell, it's more of secondary prevention. So we're talking about somebody who has had a pregnancy and they felt like they didn't wants that. So when we are talking about aftercare, we're saying we also need to prevent them from making, if it was a mistake, the same mistake, or if they it wasn't a mistake or whatever it was, but we also need to prevent them from going back to having an abortion and making sure that they didn't get pregnant in the first place. So when we're talking about aftercare, we are trying to just prevent what could be, right? And we are also making sure that they are healthy. So when we give people contraception, we're saying that between now and their next period, they could actually get pregnant again. So we're giving them contraception so that they don't fall pregnant again. Also, we're telling them that you can't have intercourse in this period because of the implication that it might have on their health as well. And also, when we're giving counseling, we are saying we want them to have a sound mind. So it's very important for somebody to have that aftercare. You'll find out that for somebody who doesn't get that aftercare, there are a lot of complications and mental issues that may arise as a result. Just like somebody who has actually given normal birth, you see, they can have that postnatal depression. The same thing can happen to somebody who has had an abortion because of a lot of things that are going on in their mind, you know, and maybe even the backlash that the society is putting on them and the pressure that is on their self is the person because they've had an abortion. So it's very important that somebody goes through all these things and have a support system that is there for them to be able to go through this and be healthy again, mentally and even physically.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, we always talk about how abortion is just fertility management. Mm-hmm. And, you know, women that are deciding to see through their pregnancies, women, for example, that have gone through pregnancy loss, women that are having abortions, that those are all acts of fertility management. And the same way that yes. you need aftercare, that you would need nursing, that you would need a doula, right? When you are giving birth or if you have lost a pregnancy is the same way mm-hmm. that we should be approaching the way that we care for women who have just experienced, you know, an abortion, the same way that, you know, women are experiencing postpartum, for example. A lot of people, mm-hmm. their practices of how they care for women post-abortion, look at it as postpartum, considering the different hormone makeup and the different hormones that people go through when they carry a fetus.
Yeah,
I feel like it's pretty loaded, and I'm really kind of into the way that I've just been consuming a lot of content around kind of like abortion aftercare and realizing, of course, the Western countries, Australia, you know, some places in the United States, they have like really kind of gotten into abortion doulas and really supporting people, having people have at-home abortions and having someone come and assist you there and tell you everything you need to know and, you know, be available should you need anything, should you start to experience anything. Just having that support system. Just having that. And maybe it should actually just be called abortion care, not abortion aftercare, because you could easily be helping someone who is about to have an abortion, who hasn't had it yet, but they still need someone to talk to and they still need that support system.
Because also, you see, in our communities, it's taboo, right? You can't really talk about abortion like, oh, you know, I've just had an abortion like that. When you hear about somebody having had an abortion, it's probably rumor and, you know, they're talking about them in a bad way. And because of that, somebody might actually go and have an abortion and come back into the home and not tell the people that they're staying with. And, you know, maybe only when they get sick, if they do get sick, will that be a problem? And then will that abortion be discovered? But they might probably be having, you know, a mind that is running a race and, you know, thinking a lot of things. And in the end, we've had people who've been had very bad depression to a point where, you know, they've had to go maybe to a psychiatric unit to get help even after that, only for them to discover that they'd had an abortion and they didn't have anyone to talk to and they couldn't discuss it with anyone and it was just eating them away. So yeah, the society that we are in, it doesn't really look at abortion that way. To say it's something that somebody can decide to have and still have some sort of support to say, you know what, this is the decision that you made and you also need to get this help or you also need to talk to someone. I'm here for you. We can talk about it. So when it's being talked about as rumor, you know, it then makes somebody feel some type of way and they probably won't even say it, even to the people that they're staying with. And it's sad.
Yeah, because without enough room to kind of really feel, process and feel your feelings and even go through that body physical recovery, that might really impact your mental health, like in a negative way. Yeah. So I wanted to find out the work that you do specifically. How is it that people find you? Are they referred to you by medical practitioners? Are you like kind of like stationed at like certain clinics and hospitals? Or do you like literally just provide a service and advertise that you, we provide the service and this is where we do this?
So we've got clinics at, that are stationed at hospitals because we work closely with the Ministry of Health. So we've got a clinic at Darrell Hospital, Salim Ngabe Hospital. We've got a clinic in Chitungwiza Central Hospital. We've also got a clinic at Mpilo Hospital, at Mashingo Central Hospital, Mutare Central Hospital, Bay Bridge. So because we work with survivors of abuse, mostly we get survivors coming to the clinic to get medical services from the police, mostly. But with others, they can, when they want services, maybe they might just come to the hospital and then they are referred to the clinics because we are a specialized clinic that specifically deals with survivors of abuse. So one can be referred from another organization because they know what we do, and they can also be brought in by the police, or they can just walk in because we do give that specialized service where we deal with people who have been abused, be it sexually, physically, or even emotionally.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like awesome work. And I know we all wish that that was a service that was available to everyone, but I think having those processes in place is still important. And hopefully as policies and laws start to change, that will also mean the kind of access where, you know, government is providing services related to abortion is then also kind of like opened up. Yeah, wow. So that's great. Thank you so much for this information, and thank you for this episode, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us today. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to leave with the people, any goodbye that you want to say, just yeah, anything that you want to shout out your organization. I don't even think we've said the name of your organization this whole episode.
I did in the first place, but when I introduced myself, I don't remember. But yes, I work for Family Support Trust, which is an organization that provides free medical and psychosocial support services to survivors of abuse. We work with children mostly, but we do give services to adults as well. And like what we've been talking about here, when somebody gets raped, they get pregnant, they can apply for a termination of pregnancy. And with us, the termination is done in a government hospital by government doctors, and we only facilitate the process, and we also give aftercare when somebody has gone through that process as well. I've already talked about where we are, the clinics where people can actually access services in Harare, at Harare Central Hospital, in Chitungwiza, Chitungwiza Hospital, Mutare Central Hospital, Mashingo Provincial Hospital, Bay Bridge, and Mpilo Hospital as well.
Awesome. That sounds great. I will also just put any link to like any contact in the episode notes so that anyone who ever needs this or anyone who's referring anyone can always find it there. So again, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the amazing work that you're doing out there. And thank you to everyone who is still listening. I hope that you are enjoying this series. Again, it's really been amazing. So again, shout out to our donors, and that is a wrap on this week's episode.